Welcome to Home But Not Alone with Tim and Sarah, where we talk about real life as a stay-at-home Catholic parent. If it's noon and you're still in your pajamas, have reheated your coffee 3 times and tried to pray but got distracted, this is the place for you. Life is crazy, but through it all, remember, you're never alone. You've got God's grace and our friendship coming your way. All right, today on Home But Not Alone, we're going to give you some unsolicited parenting advice. In fact, we're going to give you the worst unsolicited parenting advice from the last 300 years. Yes, historical parenting advice, and it is terrible, so please don't follow this advice. If you think the parenting advice you hear at the grocery store is laughable, prepare yourself for some of the absolute funniest, craziest, and sometimes most cringeworthy advice through recent history. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Sarah. So speaking of bad advice, do you ever fly on planes? Have you ever flown on a plane?
I mean, I've flown on planes, not in a while.
Okay, and I won't tell you the 8-hour story. My wife always gives me a hard time because I tell the super long version. But my first flight was in college to Israel. Well, it was from St. Louis to Newark to Tel Aviv. And then coming back, it was super crazy. We got stranded in New Jersey overnight. Then we got stranded. We got all split up, and a third went to Atlanta, and a third went in Pittsburgh another night. It was insane. But
it is insane.
Since then, I've flown a lot more, mostly just, okay, you know, to see my in-laws and such. But it bugs me when people don't pay attention to the flight attendants giving the safety instructions. And no one does. I know the safety instructions, and I still I'm trying to look at them like, yeah, I'm listening. Not like in a weird, like, I'm
scary. You're probably really weirding them out because nobody listens. And then you get on the plane with your bald head and you're like, yeah.
Hold on. What does me being bald have anything to do with that? They probably are like, oh, he's got 2 cute kids. And, you know, there's his wife. She puts up with him. So he must be okay. No, it bugs me because you see all these people who are sitting in the, like, emergency lanes. And they're just like, well, I'm just going to order myself a bunch of alcoholic beverages or something. I'm like, stop doing that. Or they're like, oh, I know I fly on a plane every third Tuesday because of my job. Yes, but then they'll sit there and lower their tray before takeoff. And I'm like, you know, she's coming around, going to say, raise the tray. Like, that's just rude anyway.
Not following it is rude, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think somebody's got to listen. Somebody should listen. So anyway, but this is advice today that you should not listen to. Okay. So
listen to the advice of the flight attendant, but don't listen to our advice. Okay.
Yes. Well, listen to our advice. Just don't listen to the advice of other people. Today's advice is terrible. Don't listen to any of this.
Okay. Give me some bad advice for my parenting.
So in 1747, that's how far back we're going. And these are all chronological. They're going to take us toward the present. Dr. William Cadogan, or however you pronounce that, published an essay titled An Essay Upon Nursing and the Management of Children from Their Birth to 3 Years of Age. Okay. So an essay upon nursing and the management of children from their birth to 3 years of age. Sounds like a helpful book you could get.
Sure. Yeah.
He believed that fathers should be solely responsible for the raising of children. Because, and I quote, this business of child rearing has been too long fatally left to the management of women who cannot be supposed to have proper knowledge to fit them for such a task. So this
literally fatally, are we talking about the high infant mortality rates here, or is he just being nasty about women?
Well, you got to remember, he's speaking in 1747 jargon, and not that I'm fluent in that, because I'm not, but if I try and think back to all my readings of, like, you know, Thomas Paine and the Declaration of Independence, things that were written in that era, I suspect that he was saying fatally as in problematically, as in it was
like you're dooming these children.
Yes. If you leave, you know, child rearing to the management of women, then it's doomed to fail. Like, so that is the first piece of advice that
okay,
we should
so
not follow.
Okay, so men are supposed to take care of the children from birth to 3 years of age? Like, good luck.
I'm not sure if he even stopped at 3 years of age. Maybe he thinks men should continue to raise children past that. I mean,
they probably have an easier job of raising them past that than before that in the 1700s, well, yeah. Like without baby formula from the shelf on the store or something.
Oh, 110%. I'm not defending this guy. I just want to be very clear. I'm saying that maybe he means even farther. I'm not going to read the whole essay. There's a lot of things I want to read in life, and this is not on that list. I'm not sure where I get
your time on that.
No, if his advice is that bad, I'm not going to read the rest of his essay. So that's, oh gosh.
Just the language of let me tell you, the way he started it off with this business. Do you ever have those phrases that like set you off in no matter in what context people say them? So mine is whenever anyone says you people, like, don't you dare say you people to me, because you just like raised my blood like through the roof. I am coming at you and I'm going to argue with whatever you say because you just said you people at me. And I think like this business, I don't know, it's just getting me the same way right now. Like, he's just kind of coming in and asserting his authority.
Mm-hmm. This business of whatever you think is right is not right. Anyway,
is wrong.
Yeah. Yes, you like, must be wrong. This, mm-hmm, this nonsense has to end is what he's saying. No,
you
he's
people.
Ridiculous. You people. Okay. This next one's from a book, not okay. just an essay, but a book. The 1878 book Don'ts for Mothers.
That's disparaging.
It's already off to a terrible start. Don'ts for Mothers told mothers, gosh, this is so ridiculous, not to let their kids, quote, play the flute, blow the bugle, or play any other wind instrument.
Oh, I am not bored with this. Like, no recorders. Keep them out of my house.
Because it could injure their lungs and windpipe.
Well, there's a catch.
It's not because they're noisy.
It's because they're annoying?
No. It's because whoever wrote this for some reason believed that playing the flute would damage lungs. I don't know why. I imagine how they'd feel about the kazoo. I mean, that.
Well, imagine how they'd feel about my children screaming. Like.
Oh, I'm sure they would be like, you're all going to have your damaged lungs. But you know what the problem is? Their father's not the only one raising them. That's what it is. If he was
It's the mothers letting these kids play the flute and the bugle.
Apparently. That's. Okay, hold on.
I can't even just imagine picking up this book and turning every page and being like, don't, don't, don't. Like, this is not helpful.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, here's another one. I don't know the exact year, but, oh, we're going to get a couple pieces of advice from this fella.
Okay.
In the late 1800s, an English physician, his name was P.H. Chavez. I'm not good with names. Let's say it's Chavasse.
Nobody gets
it. No. Well, maybe they want to look up this guy.
Okay, maybe.
His books on parenting were published all around the world. He was actually a very popular parent advice doctor, whatever. He said that a shower in pregnancy was too great of a shock to women and might induce miscarriage. And so at most they could take a bath, but
so not like a baby shower.
No. I'm saying this man believed
like taking
that
a shower and cleaning yourself,
that women, not only did he encourage them to not shower while pregnant, but a bath was only a sort of option. So he really wasn't in favor of pregnant women cleaning themselves.
Oh,
and I don't know why.
Sound very pleasant.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's the late 1800s, so I know that we didn't have the same level of like bathing that people have today, but it's the late 1800s. It's not as if there was no plumbing anywhere. You know, there were plenty of places with decent plumbing. Okay, and this same guy.
Okay.
I don't know if this was in the same book or where this was, but again, this guy had a lot of books.
Okay.
Well, this one I know was from a book called Advice to Mother. I don't know where the other one was from. But in a book called Advice to Mother, he warned mothers that they shouldn't give alcohol, specifically gin. He warned mothers not to give gin to their babies because...
That sounds like good advice.
It does. But he was saying don't give them gin as a method to reduce flatulence in babies, which here's what concerns me about that.
Okay.
Who needed to be told that? Who was sitting there thinking that means that someone was perpetuating the idea enough that it had to be published in a book? Give gin to a baby in order to reduce gas. Okay. So there's your bad advice right there.
Oh, yeah, right.
I can't even fathom why someone would think that. Like, I get that some old medicines had things in them we wouldn't put in them nowadays.
Yeah.
But who's sitting there saying, well, gin cures flatulence? Like, what? That just blows my mind. Okay.
I feel like this is something that I've heard, like, my grandmother say, like, give the baby some alcohol, they'll sleep well tonight or something. Like, I don't know. Well, like, old people, I don't know. I feel like I've heard this lingering thought in the old
people. Well, yeah, if you give anybody enough alcohol, they'll sleep real well, okay? So that's, you know, I get that.
But, like, what are you thinking? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But don't give babies alcohol, okay? I don't know. I just want to clarify that for the sake of us not
for
getting sued.
For any reason.
Don't any reason. Them. Yeah.
No reason.
Okay, this, I love this. I can't believe I found this. This made me so happy. This was advice. Okay. Pregnant women in the 1910s were urged not to think about disfigured people for fear that it would affect their baby's looks. And I quote, pregnant mothers should avoid thinking of ugly people or those marked by any deformity or disease, avoid injury, fright, or disease of any kind. This was written by B.G. Jeffries and J.L. Nichols in Searchlights on Health. And some sources actually said that this was common advice from physicians up until the mid-1800s was don't think about or look at people who are not pretty. Only look at good, non-deformed, injured, non-unhealthy, look at healthy people. And anybody who looks differently, don't look at them, don't think about them, or your baby's going to develop. And I'm like, what? What do they think is transmitting through mama's eyes into utero? Like,
Well, that's like the, have you heard that, like, one of the medical doctors that examined, was it Padre Pio, said he had the stigmata because he was looking at the cross too much. And if he would stop looking at the cross so much that it would go away. And he said, he came back to them, you go stare at a bull all day and see if you grow horns. You haven't heard that one? Yeah.
No, I don't think I've heard that. That's
so
fantastic.
And I was like, what the heck is wrong with that doctor? But apparently this was like prevailing science of the time.
Oh, man. And this is why we always have to be a little bit, like I trust the doctors that I take my family to implicitly. But, oh, man, you just got to be aware of the fact that certain sciences, they change.
Science is a journey.
It certainly is.
Yes.
This is not an anti-science podcast anyway.
No.
For anyone who is listening to this as their very first episode, we are not anti-science people. We just like, wow, it's just interesting. Okay, so another one. Doctors William and Lena Sadler, they were a married couple of physicians in the early 1900s. They advised that a baby's first bath be in lard, olive oil, or butter.
Yeah.
And don't rinse it off for 2 weeks. Yep.
What are you supposed to do with the baby for 2 weeks?
I don't know. They're going to be real slippery. That's all I could think. Just, imagine a baby covered in olive oil for 2 weeks. Squirting out of your hand. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I don't know what you – anyway.
Why give it a bath in the butter in the first place? Like,
I don't know. I didn't, again.
That baby's born covered all yucky and greasy anyway, so stop.
Yeah, I confirmed that these were real. I did not go back and reread the entire sources because I don't want to. That sounds like a lot of information. And I don't want to go pay money to get these.
Oh, books. Yeah. To get the full articles, like when you see the excerpts or whatever.
No, I'm over here still, you know, spending the next 60 years
working. Uh-oh. All right. Sorry, guys. We cut out there for a minute, but we are back with our bad parenting advice.
Okay, so we had just talked about the Sadler's and the lard and olive oil bath. Okay, the Sadler's have more for us. They didn't just stop with that 2-week butter bath. In 1916, that husband-wife duo, the Sadler's, who are both doctors. My thing is being weird. All right, I gotta make sure I don't cut out again. They warned that if a woman breastfed her baby while she was angry, it would give the baby colic. They also warned her that grief would cause her milk to dry out. Huh. And neither of these have science behind them. I don't know where they got that. I don't know anything. I just think these two were apparently – anyway. So,
well, isn't there – this could totally be non-science, but isn't there something about how the mother's breast milk changes depending on like her moods?
Maybe, but
I feel like the hormones and the moods and the milk are all related, but I don't know if that would give a baby colic.
From what I understand, the colic part, and I could be wrong. Somebody out there who knows more about the hormones behind this. I just can't imagine that if a mom is angry, that then the breast milk would
have colic.
Alter its chemical formula to then, you know, cause problems for the baby. I can't imagine that because that I don't know. And again, every time I found this, because I found this on several sources, it was citing it as advice that's been debunked or really weird advice or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially like the last point that nagging would make her milk run dry. Like that's not
how does nagging someone make your that worry, grief or nagging can cause your milk to run dry. How does nagging make your milk run dry? That makes no sense. So I think that was just a misunderstanding of the female in general. let's move away from the Sadler's.
There's
something else. In the 1920s, and I couldn't find who this was, but in the 1920s, one expert apparently claimed that babies should not be given weak names or it would lead to a weak-willed adult. Now, as somebody who tries to give their child good Catholic names, I totally understand the power of names. Yeah. But at the same time, I can't imagine that there's a biological science behind that. There might be something in society that you give them a name and they get made fun of. They're less accepted because of that. But this was considered to be medical science from what I read.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what kind of expert is this? Like a psychology expert or a biology expert? Because if they're talking about the psychology of names, then maybe.
See, and everybody the few places I found this, nobody said anything about it being, you know, mental health, psychological, any of that. And they all cited it as medical evidence in terms of what I took it as a physician medical. So, getting a little bit more recent here. In the 1950s, some experts believed that baby proofing was parenting. And I totally get that some people don't want to baby proof because they want their child to explore or they want their child to learn from experience. That's all fine. That I think that is entirely up to the parents making decisions based on their home, their child, their own, you know, desires, whatever it may be. But where it went weird was this. It's a sign. Baby proofing is a sign of lazy parenting and that the baby should learn. Keep in mind, this isn't older children. This is the baby should learn what not to touch simply by the mother consistently yelling at them, and that a mother yelling is the only way a child learns what to touch and what not to touch. And I thought, No, that's just bad advice. That's not funny like some of the other ones. That's just bad advice.
Yeah.
Don't just yell at a baby and get them so.
Well, anyway. This is terrible because somebody recently passed on to me a parenting book and said, like, you know, when you're done, keep it or pass it on or whatever. And I'm like, I honestly don't know what to do with this book because it talks about teaching a baby like to do what you say and like to stay put by a baby when they learn to crawl. Like you put them on a blanket and then you tell them not to leave the blanket, and then if they crawl off the blanket you yell at them.
What?
And you do it over and over until they learn it, and I'm like, I can't even like pass this on to someone and be like, this wasn't my style, like I need to put this in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to do with this because this is just no. But it was like a recent book. It wasn't like an artifact from history. So like you said, this was from what,
this was the 1950s. It was you're lazy if you don't just scream at your baby.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, no, yep. I'm not going with that one. That's yep. I can't. And again, a little more recent. We're not going to get all the way up to present day, but a little more.
Historical bad advice, not present day. Yes,
not present day.
A whole nother episode.
Yes, absolutely. So a 1958 issue of Mother and Baby magazine, which I believe is in England, if I remember when I did my research. This is actually funny because one of the more recent editors of this magazine went back to some of their earlier issues and then wrote about some of the terrible advice from the early years of the magazine. Yes, that she was the editor now, and she was like, this is horrible. We have to talk about it and show people how bad this used to be, which I love that. I thought that was
great. Yeah.
Now, remember back in the 1700s when dad was supposed to raise the baby?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this magazine expressed concern about the new trend of fathers being in the delivery room, and not for some, you know, like, well, men should be a part of this, should be away from this, shouldn't be a part of it, whatever it is.
Okay.
Here's the quote. Our own view is that the business of childbirth often brings vicarious suffering and anxiety to the expectant father with an imaginative and susceptible mind. His presence at the birth may, I don't know if I can finish this. His presence at the birth may be really painful to him.
Oh, really?
In such circumstances, is it really kind to insist on a husband's presence? And I thought, who is sitting there? Okay, true story. When my first child was born, I didn't know if I was going to be able to handle, because I'd never been around anything like that with, you know, that much blood or that much whatever, different things. I didn't know how
trauma,
it was going to go.
Pain, intensity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, I thought, am I going to get lightheaded with what I see? I don't know. So one of the nurses said, go over there, get yourself a chair, pull it up next to your wife, because if you pass out and fall to the floor, she said, first of all, then we have three patients, mom, baby, and you. And she goes, and guess what? I'm stepping right over you to deal with mom and baby. You're not my problem. And I loved that because the truth is, if I genuinely pass out, I'm sure they'll call in more nurses and, you know, make sure I'm not dead and whatnot. But I haven't like hit my head on the tile floor hard.
Right. And as soon as you're fine, though, they're leaving you there.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. But the point is, the priority needs to be on mom and baby. And the fact that they And I suppose part of it is they were worried, like, maybe there was, you know, some old ideas about, well, dad's never seen his perfect bride in such an imperfect situation, and he can't handle that. Like, that's one of the thoughts I had after reading that nonsense. But either way, it's nonsense. It's
just the line about the expectant father with the imaginative and susceptible mind. Like, what a way to talk about men. Like, who wrote this?
But that's also what made me think, like, maybe the man, maybe the father, the husband is imagining his, you know, his bride in this ideal her body is perfect or whatever, this and that. And then he sees her delivering a baby and it's too traumatic for him to see and to, you know, and I'm like, first of all, that's ridiculous. And no man should be like, oh, I saw my wife give birth. Now I think less of her. No, you should see your wife give birth and be like, oh my gosh, she did that. That's incredible.
She's a hero.
I've seen it twice. I still don't know I mean, I know how it happens, but I don't know how it happens at the same time. Like, seriously, that works, and it does, and that's amazing. Okay. Last one.
Are we done with this one? Really funny. This might be the best one out of all of them.
It's a good one. All right, last one here. All right, 1962, Dr. Walter Sackett, and I have no idea about this guy. Maybe he's still respected in some areas, but there are certain aspects of what he says that I found that made me laugh.
Okay.
He published a book claiming that babies should eat cereal at 2 to 3 days after birth. Bacon and eggs, they should eat bacon and eggs, which I like that, at 6 weeks after birth. And they should be drinking coffee when they are 6 months old.
What the heck?
Now, I don't know if decaf was a thing in 1962. I didn't bother to Google that or anything. But whether it's decaf or regular, don't give coffee to a six-month-old. Just don't do it. I don't know. That seems like a bad idea. Now, somebody's going to come on here and say, hey, you said no gin for flatulence, but you got to know what coffee grounds do for constipation. Maybe that's some sort of remedy I've never heard of. I have no idea. But here's where this guy completely loses me. Okay. He says that you shouldn't hold or physically comfort your child. And he went in to say things like if they don't have a wet or poopy diaper, then, you know, and if the safety pin for the diaper isn't stabbing them, if they've been fed, leave them all night, let them cry, whatever it is. And I understand there are a variety of parenting, you know, approaches. And maybe that's one that some of you guys take. And that's fine. You know, I can't tell people which parenting strategy to use. But this is where he loses me. You shouldn't hold or physically comfort your child because cuddling babies increases the child's chance of becoming a socialist. Now, I studied socialism in college. I have a degree in history. I've studied politics. I've paid attention to this. I've cuddled lots of babies.
Do you find socialists to be cuddly?
I've never cuddled a socialist. I gotta say that. I've never cuddled a socialist. I've never once seen any nonsense that says, or any evidence, I should say, that indicates that cuddling a baby makes them a socialist. And to keep in mind, and this is where it's important to know history, 1962 is when this was published. The Cuban Missile Crisis happened in 1962. So that was like the height of tensions between socialism and capitalism, between, you know, communism and democracy, between the USSR and the United States. Oh, sure, the country I stumble over is mine. I got the others all right. Anyway.
Like using this fear to promote these wacky ideas.
And that might have been like he might have believed in this and then just used the fear to promote it. Or maybe his own judgment was clouded and he was like, well, you know, these two must line up. And he might have genuinely believed it. But again, that's important to not only know history, but to then know like the history of where you're getting your advice. So like if your mother raised, you know, 2 to 6 very healthy children, or one if it was if it was just you, I'm making up a number here. I'm saying if your mother raised some healthy children and she's like, hey, here's what worked for me, then maybe that'll work for you. I don't know. But maybe you're like, yeah, my mom did a good job. All right. Yeah. You know, I'm going to take her advice. And I know she made her decisions based on this, this, or this. If your mom took advice from her grandmother and her grandmother was busy doing one of these things, gave her babies gin to reduce flatulence, maybe don't take that advice. So I think it's really important to know where we're getting our advice from as we are parents. Oh, gosh.
This was fun. So, leave us a comment on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube. I love this bad parenting advice. So tell us about the worst or the funniest parenting advice you've ever received, so we can all have a good laugh.
Yes. And so thank you guys for watching and listening. If you could do us a favor, subscribe, send this podcast to someone else who might, you know, enjoy it just a little bit. And yeah, give us likes and all that. Review us. We really appreciate that. Sarah, where can people find you?
ToJesusSincerely.com and on social media at ToJesusSincerely.
And you can find me at ChasedLove.org or on Facebook and Instagram at TheChasedLove. So, make sure dad stays out of the delivery room, but does all the child raising. Cover your socialist baby in lard and make sure your kids get lots of gin so they stay away from wind instruments. And remember, you're never alone.